Hey, hi, this is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. So here's a funny story. I was about to do this show live from the studio, but alas, someone at my wife's workplace is positive, and therefore she's a close contact, and we have to do this from work from home. But, you know, the show must go on, life must go on, and therefore we shall have the show regardless of where I am physically. Let's start with the expectations that the Prime Minister is going to make the announcement of cabinet appointments tomorrow at 11 a.m. What we have understood is that the swearing-in ceremony will take place at 2:30 p.m. tomorrow. So there's plenty of things that we need to talk about when it comes to what would be some of the items that they need to focus on. One item that is closely dear to my heart is, of course, the digital economy as well as the technology policy sector, what it must be done. Particularly when it comes to the government first 100 days in this space. And, you know, like-minded people tend to think alike, and therefore I have recently read the statement coming in from SERI, or the Social and Economic Research Initiative, talking about some of the key items that the government must focus on when it comes to the digital space. So joining us this evening is Nabila Hussein, live from her residence as well. Nabila, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Yeah, so in the statement that you guys made, you outlined some of the key things that they need to focus on. And I should start off with what are the lists that is going on with the that you have outlined. Why did you decide to go for this five instead of other stuff? What were some of the key features in this call to action by SERI, the call to make against the government to focus on these areas in the digital space?
Thanks, Ibrahim. So I think it's important that we start out by talking about the fact that COVID-19 has really shown us the interconnectedness between all of us across the world more than any mobile network or submarine cable has enabled. However, having said that, it's really technology that has allowed for the continuity across businesses, education, and social interactions, as well as we were forced into online spaces overnight. So with all of this in mind, I think what we're seeing is greater a push and a desire to transform digital infrastructure and strengthen digital economies around the world. Malaysia has taken steps in the same direction with the My Digital, or the Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint, which sets out really progressive, bold ambitions, really setting Malaysia on the right track and seeking to do all the right things by 2025 and 2030 with different milestones for different goals. However, what we are seeing is a mismatch between government aspirations and what happens on the ground. And so we at the Social and Economic Research Initiative, we see the new administration as an opportunity to address some of these areas by way of digital policies. And the reason that we chose to look at these five areas, they are really quite diverse. They cover a wide variety of areas: data, access to data, skills development, a call for regulatory clarity towards increased foreign direct investment, skills and talent development, as well as digital infrastructure. So quite a variety of areas, and someone reading it might draw the conclusion that, you know, this is really just a long wish list. But we do see these as critical enablers for Malaysia's digital economy to thrive, particularly on the points of regulatory clarity, as well as more innovative and pragmatic policies on the use of data.
It's not just a long list of wish lists. I think these are pertinent issues. Very recently, as 2 days ago, there was some announcement by Facebook and Google, for instance, continuing on their building of undersea cable. This time around, it's called Apricot. This is in continuation of the Aqua and Bifrost cable laying project that they are on. And what irritates me, what irks me the most, is that Apricot is going through, you know, 5-6 other ASEAN countries, you know, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines, and again, they're skipping Malaysia. And it goes without saying that this is perhaps because of the cabotage policy that the government did not, the previous government did not resolve, despite Wee Ka Siong, the then transport minister, saying that it'll take 2 weeks for them to resolve it then. And I remember distinctly, you know, inviting you over on my show. We're doing it live then at the studio. And even then, we were talking about the need for them to resolve it immediately at that point in time. Fast forward 4 months down the road, nothing has happened. And in fact, we don't really have either a transport minister or a minister in charge of any digital policy yet. Maybe tomorrow we'll find out more. But these are the kind of things that needs to be resolved like yesterday, right? And I don't know whether some of the wish lists that you mentioned include this kind of solution that requires a lot of issues as well. What do you think of this?
Absolutely. So what we are seeing is there is a greater need for regulatory clarity, stability and predictability as well, because these are some of the things that investors look for. So in the case of cabotage, for example, so this was a policy that was introduced by Transport Minister, then Transport Minister YB Anthony Lok, and then it was reversed by Dato' Sri Wee Ka Siong in November of 2020. So just perhaps for background for all of us listening in, cabotage refers to the transport of goods or passengers between two domestic points in a country and is traditionally implemented to protect local shipping interests. So while most countries in the world do have cabotage policies, these do not traditionally treat submarine cable installation or repair as cabotage. So here we see a mismatch where a digital era situation is being force-fitted into a policy made in the analog world. And why this is so critical is because the lack of decision-making, so Cabinet was meant to make a decision in April following a two-week review period. However, as you have rightly said, we are now four months on without a decision. This lack of decision-making has been cited to be one of the key reasons why Malaysia has lost out to other countries in the region. And we are concerned that we run the risk of losing out on further digital investments of a similar nature.
You know, you were mentioning about the reinstatement of FDI when it comes to technology, but generally speaking, foreign direct investment have been on the downside. It has been going out for years now, and not least because of the change of government in 2018, let alone 2020 and 2021. It's also important for us to note that this trend is just happening just in Malaysia. Other countries around the region, they're seeing increased FDI in technology. Do you feel that the government today, led by Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, has the wherewithal to actually attract foreign direct investment when it comes to building the technology sector in this country?
Right. So I think how we need to look at this is the way in which infrastructure has transformed. The digital infrastructure that we see today in the form of data centers, submarine cables, these are the highways and the railway tracks of the 21st century. So with the incoming administration, we do hope that there will be a renewed sense of urgency. But of course, it remains to be seen as to whether or not the incoming administration will take heed of the fact that Malaysia does need to step up our game, and we have lost out in recent days. But this does not mean that there are no future opportunities that we may be able to reap. On your point on FDI, interestingly, the United Nations Conference of Trade and Development in their World Investment Report this year noted that across the world, there was a drop in FDI due to the pandemic, understandably, but Asia was the only region which saw an upward trend. So there are many things going for us, and what we need is to also ensure that we keep up with this fast-moving pace, and that we don't lose out due to our inability or unwillingness to look at what are our strengths, what are our weaknesses, and ensure that Malaysia too are among those countries in the region that are seeing an upward trend of foreign direct investment.
So what would be some of the views that you guys have, that Seri has, when it comes to the ongoing plans that the previous government is doing, namely the digital economy blueprint? Is it still going to take place, you think? Is it still going to be executed by Ismail Sabri's administration? And of course, what do you think about the 12th Malaysia Plan? It was hatched by two governments ago, if you think about it, let alone the previous government. And of course, I don't know whether this government is going to be able to or want to carry out some of the plans that has already been outlined by the 12th Malaysia Plan. The continuity of government plans is a problem here. Do you see this as a real issue, or it's going to be resolved, in your opinion, quite amicably by this new administration?
Well, I think it's important that we focus here on policies and less on politics. I think there is clearly a tendency for our policies to, for our politics to divide us, but I really do think that there needs to be a clear sense of stewardship and for our hopes and ambitions for the country in the form of policy documents and the vision to unite us and keep us on that path, hopefully towards a more progressive, resilient, inclusive digital Malaysia. So I do think that regardless of, for example, the minister or ministers that are appointed to oversee digital policies, I think there is a need for us to really look at the transformation of how we do certain things. And this primarily, I would say, needs to be applied to our policies and regulations around data. So data being the fuel and the lifeblood of the digital economy is really what is going to be the game changer here for us if we are able to harness this data in meaningful ways. So, for example, when we look at the concept of smart cities, this involves both technology and data. It may be technology that allows, for example, our waste management units or our rubbish bins to speak to each other through an application, but it is that data collection and that data analysis that truly makes it smart. So if we are to continue on with our progressive and bold ambitions as set out in MyDigital, but on this backbone of laws and policies made for the analog age, that might not take us very far. So what I would hope to see is a concerted effort to look at, for example, how do we treat data today? Are there clear data classification mechanisms in place? Why do I bring up data classification? Because for example, the Official Secrets Act that we have was developed at a time where government operated primarily with physical documents. But now with digital government, e-government, and the MyDigital blueprint outlining the fact that citizen services will be end-to-end online by 2022, I believe, there needs to be a shift in the policies around data and how we treat data. So we know from our studies and research that across the world, approximately 80% of government data is not a national secret or official secret. And there is also a cost implication here, where if we treat 80% of our data as a national secret or official secret, we are more likely to require more controls and more protection around it, which will result in increased costs, increased taxpayer funds as well. So we cannot be protecting our diamonds and our paper clips in the same way. There really needs to be a clear data classification so that we are able to protect what we need to protect, but at the same time, the spillover effect here would mean that there is clarity in which data could be then filtered into our open data initiatives. So as you may know, Malaysia is placed 87 in the world. And that clearly just shows us that there is a great deal of potential here. This is an area where governments around the world are struggling to ensure that while they seek to attract artificial intelligence, big data, IoT investments, they do not implement policies that impede the harnessing of the data. So these mismatches between digital era situations and analog policies is something that the new administration would really need to address to ensure that as we continue on with My Digital and the goals set out in the Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint, we are able to really go forward in a way that fits into the needs of this digital age.
All right. Nabila, we'll go for one break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more about the digital policy that the new administration has to embark. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, welcome back. This is Notepad. We're doing this live. And joining us is, of course, Nabila Hussein, the Tech Policy Fellow of SERI, or the Social and Economic Research Initiative, a think tank here in Kuala Lumpur. Nabila, let's talk a little bit more of politics. I know you were talking more about policy rather than politics, but unfortunately, we have to talk about politics because the policies are going to be carried out by politicians. And the thing about this is that none of the administration members of today did run on a technology platform. Maybe if you think about, you know, some young guns out there, somebody like Sheryl Hamdan, for instance, did gun for it, but unfortunately he did not get the win at the election polls. And from the opposition side, we've seen how some of them, Nik Nazmi, Fahmi Fazil, did run on a tech platform, but they're not in government. So it seems like the folks that are currently forming the administration might not have yet told the world what their plans are for the digital space. This has resulted in many of us, particularly those that are in this digital space, are watching with anxiety, trying to understand whether or not they have the wherewithal to pull it off. What do you think of this government trying to make this work when it comes to policy decisions regarding digital space? Do you think they can do it?
So, given the ongoing political developments and the changes that we have seen and will continue to see over the next few days at least, if not weeks or months, digital and technology will continue to be an integral part of our way forward, whether we like it or not. Technology is and has become incredibly pervasive. It is all around us. It is what is enabling this conversation today. It is enabling our education, our businesses, our ability to stay connected to family and friends. But given the fact that we are looking at potentially our talent pool for our leadership, our political leadership, coming from 220 members of parliament, more likely to be 114 members of parliament. This is a very narrow talent pool for our country of 32 million. And I think this has been said before that there needs to be diversity. If not in leadership, that should be the ideal situation where our leadership reflects the people of Malaysia across age, gender, background, socioeconomics. If that is not possible at this stage, then what we would need is for the politicians and our leaders to have diverse teams and people who are able to advise and help them to shape the way forward. If we are to rely solely on those in power now, we are looking at an average age that is older than the age of our country. And that, I don't think, sets us up well. However, I am quite optimistic and I do think that we have many leaders in the form of people in the younger generation who understand not only technology, but the cracks and fissures and divides that exist and are working hard, have been working hard to bridge those divides. So I really do think that our answer lies in a collaborative, consultative, and diverse way forward, but that will really require political will to listen, not only to people across the aisle, but to people who don't look and don't sound like and don't have similar backgrounds to those who may be in power and be given positions of power.
You know, one would argue that this administration has a very short lifespan, at most 22 months. But some expectations is that there would be just another 7 to 8 months before the next general election is going to take place. Whatever that range is, it's still short. It's not that 5 year that we're used to. Do you feel that they might want to think about this very seriously as a platform for them to harp on, a focus on digital, a focus on data, a focus on tech space, how to bring investors in this realm? Do you feel that this could be a good political angle that they can use in order for them to get more votes in the elections to come?
Well, technology, if harnessed in an inclusive, pragmatic, trusted, secure way, can be a very powerful tool. But it is indeed that a tool, which can also be a weapon. So it really depends on the will and the intention of those seeking to use technology. There are authoritarian governments who use technology as a surveillance tool, and there are governments using technology to uplift people, increase equality, and increase socioeconomic opportunity. So absolutely, it could bring a great deal of opportunity and propel Malaysia forward. It is a short amount of time, but we have also seen how technology cycles, for example, are very short, and technology has also enabled exponential growth in different areas. So typical conventional periods of time could look different through a technology lens. So it really comes back to that question of stewardship and making decisions in the best interest of the nation and not for any political or individual interests.
Final question, Nabila, would be on the skill development that you speak of, that Seri was talking about. What would be some of the key areas of growth that you think the government must focus on when it comes to building the digital space?
Right. So this is actually something that we collaborated on recently with the Strategic Change Management Office within the Economic Planning Unit. And they are the agency in charge of overseeing the Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint. And what we did was we conducted a digital talent survey to better understand across private sector the gaps, the challenges, and the opportunities. And what we continue to see is that there is a lot of room for growth. There is a lot of interest in developing technology skills, but also beyond private sector, I think there is a need for civil society, civil service and policymakers to be upskilled so that they are able to develop digital native policies. So today we see a great effort to offer digital skilling, upskilling, reskilling for people in school, those of us in the workforce, students, educators. But there is a great need for civil servants and policymakers to also be able to upskill and reskill because, for example, today data literacy is as important as digital literacy. So that is one area that skills development will need to improve on as a nation. And I think one other point is as we look towards our budget at the end of next month, what I hope to see is budget line items that don't only look at technology as software and hardware, but also for allocations to be set aside for skilling, for data management, data scrubbing, for example, so that we are then able to do the exciting things that involve technologies such as AI and IoT. We really need to go to the fundamentals. Skills are the building block of the digital economy, and this needs to be reflected across the board, including in our budget as well.
Thank you very much. That was Nabila Hussain, Tech Policy Fellow at SERI, or the Social and Economic Research Initiative. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com, look for SERI, or look for Notepad. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.